Reaction with Harry Broadhurst and Tony Azzetta.
Short, because that's a hell of a long intro. Hello, everyone. And by everyone, I'm assuming at least two people, neither of which are my personalities that come out. So, this is the WWE Raw Reaction. Myself, actually, I'm the co-host, Tony Acero. Harry Broadhurst is the main event guy here. He knows way more than I'll ever forget. So, let's give him a little bit of applause, bring his ass in here, and hope that he can drop some knowledge. Harry, are you here?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, Tony. What's up, man?
Oh, look at that. Two sexy beasts ready to talk about wrestling.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. I am the voice of Raw Reaction. My name is Harry Broadhurst. As mentioned, Tony Acero joining me here. And we are here for the debut episode of Raw Reaction presented by Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Thanks, Jay, for giving us a shot. Oh, and Greg, too. Anyway, you ready to get right down to it here, Tony?
You know, I didn't even watch Raw, so I'm just going to wing it, see how this goes. No, I did watch Raw. I actually have to watch Raw.
Yeah, you were contractually obligated by one Larry Zonka to watch Raw.
Yes, it is in my contract. He has pictures of me that are quite embarrassing, and if I don't do it, he'll let them out.
More specifically, he'll send them to AJ.
Yeah. Let's talk about her. No, let's talk about Raw. What better way to start than the beginning of the show?
Let's be perfectly honest here. I think the best word to describe your opening show for tonight's show was creepy.
It was creepy.
Do you want to go into details or should
I? Yeah, a little Children of the Corn vibe going on. I'll admit to everyone that for the first 30 minutes or so of Raw of every week, I watch it on a live stream via Sky Sports, whatever the hell it is on the other side of the pond. What that means is that they break the commercials up slightly differently. So the opening segment for me was a little bit choppy. They threw in two random commercials. However, I watched it again just before calling to get the show started, and it came off a lot better without the breaks. I think the only thing I didn't like was the elongated laughter of Bray Wyatt. But, yes, it was creepy. And, if you want to get down to it, the only negative aspect of that is that it was completely undercut about 2 hours later when Cena basically no-sold the entire thing. But if we're focusing on the opening, then, yes, creative and creepy and a whole bunch of other C words.
The best part about it to me was the fact that Bray Wyatt was able to so convincingly get inside of Cena's head by targeting the one thing that Cena's always been focused on, children. We saw a highlight package play a little bit later on in the evening of Cena granting Make-A-Wishes number 402 through 404, I believe it was.
Right.
And you could tell, based on the look that Cena had inside of the ring while he was in the cage and Children of the Wyatts were surrounding the cage, that Cena was concerned that Bray was so easily able to get inside of the head of the young children, the younger viewers there.
Yeah, it's definitely what they were going for, using the children as something that was worth, you know, talking about and making Cena vulnerable, if you will, even if, like I said, it lasted for a couple of hours at most. It happened well, you know, you start with the kids on the ramp, and then all of a sudden they're surrounding the ring, and I hate children, so I was pretty freaked out.
Kids gotta love them. No, legally, you have to. It's part of being an adult, apparently. Anyway,
just don't love them like the Greg DeMarco that people have found online because apparently he's a pedophile.
And that running bit takes over a second show here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Yes. Which, by the way, thank you, fellas, for having us. now, sticking with the opening for a little bit, there's a, in terms of his John Cena, I mean, his doubt of, you know, the fans having his back and whatnot, do you think that that's working at all? Is it something that we as the IWC roll our eyes at and just say, yeah, whatever? Or is it integral to the telling of the story that they're doing right now?
Honestly, to me, it comes off really disingenuous. Because, let's be perfectly honest here, with as much publicity as he gets for the company, with as much charity work as he does for the company, the odds of them actually having the courage to pull the trigger on a Cena heel turn is very slim at best. So, the fact that he's even contemplating the fact that they're beginning to turn their backs on him, I think the other way that he should have looked at it here and the way that he could have come across to not come off as disingenuous was to say that it was an opportunity that the C Nation was giving him the opportunity to get his hands on Bray Wyatt even before the pay-per-view, even if it meant him having to go through Luke Harper and Eric Rowan as well.
Right. Now, what I want to talk about a little bit also is the, you know, the WWE, they have a group of writers, and as a writer, you're supposed to, you know, tell an intriguing story, and one of the tools that you use as an intriguing storyteller is a metaphor. The metaphor that they're going with today, which I believe they're going to be using quite a bit in video packages on Sunday, is the fact that Cena is trying to trap Wyatt's evil ways in a cage, and if he lets them out, thereby letting out other evil ways, the crowd will be lost forever. Do you think that's a bit of a stretch?
No, I actually kind of understand that there. I mean, in order to try to tame an animal, the best way to do that is to try to tame it, but to try to cage it. But the problem with that here is that an animal is never more dangerous than when it's caged, and I think Cena kind of stepped into it here by agreeing to the cage match with Bray Wyatt, because I think that as dangerous as we've seen Wyatt under normal circumstances, it's going to get even more dangerous for Cena inside of the cage this Sunday at Extreme Rules.
Okay. I'll take that. Yeah, I know a lot of the questions I'm asking don't necessarily have an answer for myself, and if they do, I probably don't even know it yet. I'm going to be using you a lot, Harry, as far as, you know, enhancing my laziness, so just go with it.
But perfectly fine. I'm the host for a reason. I'm here to provide the insight. You're here to provide whatever you can, whenever you can.
Right. All right. So do you have anything else to say about the opening?
Well, as you said, I don't agree with the fact that Cena basically blew it off a couple hours later into the show. I mean, especially with that whole stupid donkey thing he was talking about there.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead.
It was a little awkward. I felt wrong. I mean, I don't know any donkeys personally, but I'm sure if I did, they wouldn't be really happy about the comments made. I get, once again, the little pun that he was making about putting a foot in the ass, but if he's referring to an actual donkey, putting a foot in a donkey's ass isn't exactly appealing to anyone, including said donkey.
Much less the people for the ethical treatment of animals. I'll eventually spit that sentence out correctly.
Yeah, well.
The other concern that I have there, too, is the fact that with Cena making the jokes again and stuff, after just a couple hours after he was so awestruck and at the sight of the children surrounding the ring there, how are we supposed to take him taking Wyatt seriously going into Sunday, especially since Cena's already got a pinfall victory over Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania this year?
Yeah, but, you know, they don't remember that. We're not supposed to either. No, it's just a simple Cena booking that you either come to accept and, you know, just let happen, or you harp on about it for roughly 10 minutes on a podcast.
Yes. Either like it or learn to live with it.
Yes, like marriage.
More about that guy later in the show, too.
Right. So, you know, of course, this is a debut show. There's a lot of things in progress as far as little thematic elements that we'll have and, you know, funny jokes and whatnot. I'm not going to lie to anybody listening. This is the epitome of freestyling. I hardly plan anything in my life, let alone a radio show talking about wrestling. So an outline that I've made for the show is probably going to be tossed out halfway throughout it. mainly because I'm a Greg DeMarco guy, and that's exactly what he taught me to do, never go by the book. So in that same aspect, however, we're going to try to keep certain things, you know, adhered to, and one of them is to just basically point out a couple of people throughout the show that either impressed me or made me feel like it was worth watching, and it will be signified by me opening up a can of Mountain Dew, because it is my favorite drink, unless, of course, we're talking alcohol. And the first one that I have, the first man that is, you know, I would want to drink to, is I'm going to go with Wade Barrett, not simply for the kayfabe reason of him winning the match to be facing Big E for the IC title, but because of the match that he had both this week and last week. He's showing a, I don't want to say a new brutality, but something worth watching. And him and Sheamus and he and RVD put on something pretty good, I think, especially for a Raw where I think 80% of the matches tonight were very short. So I'm really happy. I kind of do want to see where he goes, whether he wins the belt or not. I'm not sure, but I'm liking it.
And what about the almost baby-facious reaction that he got tonight, too, especially delivering the I'm afraid I have a bit of bad news line?
Yeah, you know, when the gimmick first started, a lot of people didn't really see it going anywhere. Some people did say that, you know, it's Wade Barrett. If anyone could do something with it, he can. And I think he's proven that he can, in fact, do something with it. He's taken the gimmick from a joke to something serious, and it's been used by other superstars even, you know, that they've got bad news and blah, blah, blah. You couple that with the belief in him from the writers and from the higher-ups, and then you know, mix in a little bit of actual good wrestling, then you have someone worth watching and worth paying attention to.
Yeah, I was on the 411 site earlier today, and I saw a post on there that you guys had attributed from one of the dirt sheets saying that Vince McMahon himself is really high on the Bad News Barrett character as well. And realistically speaking, what better force to have in your corner for a gimmick than Vince himself, you know?
Yeah, it worked for The Undertaker. Yes, exactly. I completely agree. You know, Wade Barrett is something that I think people look at as always having something, just never having the right backing, whether we're, you know, just people who read the online reports and feel that it is what it is, or we're fans. We see something in him, even, you know, yes, you can be a fan of a heel. We see something worth watching. We just never get that backing due to the whole booking system that the WWE has, where they pretty much have ADD in terms of who they want to push and not push.
Right, and that's been kind of the biggest problem for Barrett, is the stop-start pushing that he's been experiencing through most of his career, especially since the fade-out of the original Nexus back in, I want to say, late 2010, early 2011.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Wade. One of these days.
Clearly,
and I think that day's coming.
Talent there. I'm sorry, Tony. Clearly, there's a ton of talent there, but the concern for Barrett is going to be is what happens when they decide to go in through one of their kicks again where he's not featured on television regularly or where he's not going to be an integral part of the show. Because remember, he's had issues as well in the past with his visa and stuff, so hopefully he's able to keep all those issues under wraps as well.
Yeah, I forget stuff like that. So it's good that you reminded me. I foresee good things with him. He's still young in terms of not age necessarily, but freshness of the character. In essence, it's only a few months old, so I'm sure there's something going down there in the future, if not already. Now, in terms of the the show and the flow of it, to anyone listening, there is no set flow, but you know there is going to be at least one break just to make sure that Harry has enough. I don't know, what do you drink? Water? Ginger ale, is that right?
Coca-Cola at the present moment.
All right, so we're all soda drinkers here. Okay, so in terms of that, we're going to take a real quick break just so that I can get situated with something. I seem to have lost my left shoe, and I don't know where it went. So let's listen to the theme of DDP while I find my shoe.
Self-high-five. DDP. Too cool.
Are we back?
Hello?
Are we... Okay, I'm just making sure. I had a bit of a phone issue there. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Raw Reaction. Once again, Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero here. So you brought up the first one here for the Let's Talk About Raw. I say I take us into our second point, Tony.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's talk about the main event segment here. Let's talk about Evolution and the Shield. And the only part of this we're not going to get into, because he's going to be our third talking point, is the return of the Nature Boy himself. So first things first here is, what are you expecting this Sunday as we get the six-man tag here between Batista, Randy Orton, and Triple H against Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins?
A whole lot of ass-kicking. I'm not sure where we're going. I mean, you know, Booking 101 says that Evolution stands tall due to the Shield doing just that. However, the main event segment, not even the match, but it was a lot of Evolution first and then the Shield second. Typically it's not as split in terms of one going over another, the Raw before pay-per-view. And another interesting fold is the addition of Ric Flair and the weird thing that he did, which we'll get into later. But, I mean, the Shield, I don't know, in my eyes, they can't do any wrong, and I'm really glad that they stuck with it and they were able to be turned face so seamlessly. Automatically going up against Orton, Batista, and Triple H has brought their stock up more so than it's been already. I mean, I think this whole thing has made all six men more important than they were before. Triple H was becoming tiresome, Orton was boring and a puppet, and Batista was just Batista. Now, those three all
just
kind of
hanging around in their skinny jeans.
Exactly. And now, you know, they're all suited up. There's a lot more clout, and they seem to be having a lot more fun, I guess you could say, which brings more legitimacy to what they're trying to be. On the other side of the coin, you've got the Shield, who's always been badass, and they're continuing to do their thing. So I'm actually excited, obviously more so than the crowd that was there tonight.
Yeah, what is up with the crowd's reaction to that segment there? Very vocal for most of the show, but pretty much sat on their hands for that main event segment.
Yeah, I'm gonna blame that on something that I always blame, and that is the fact that Raw is 3 hours. I mean, I don't know which last show you went to where you weren't, you know, ring announcing or, you know, being hit with a Singapore cane, but going to a WWE event is very tiresome. You know, it's not just 3 hours. It's about four. You got maybe one or two dark matches. You got a lot of stuff in between. And you got, you know, a dark match at the end, maybe one at the beginning. They filmed something for Superstars. I mean, if you get there, you're sitting pretty for a while. So, I mean, it's got to be really exciting, or you got to be really big fans.
I want to say that the last Raw that I was at was back in Pittsburgh in May of last year. The last actual WWE event I was at was Royal Rumble in Pittsburgh of this year.
Okay. Well, the Rumble's a different beast, I think.
Right. Rumble's one of those situations where you're kind of going for the ambiance in addition to the show itself, just because you have all of the intangibles with the Rumble show in that they have a lot of audience interaction, more so than usual this year. We all know what happened at this year's Royal Rumble. And whereas I agree with you as far as the Raw being 3 hours thing there, and going back to the experience that we had in May when I was in Pittsburgh for Raw, when they did the Superstars taping, and then they did a couple matches as well for they did a post-show match, and then they had the full three-hour Raw. And the thing is while you're getting the commercial breaks at home, you're getting constant video packages while you're at the live event as well, so you're constantly having to pay attention to something going on. There's no break.
Exactly.
And I think
there
that
is
burns
no break.
I think that burns the fan. I think that burns the fan out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the event as a whole, as a wrestling fan, is fun and exciting. But in terms of fatigue, I mean, I just think two hours was a good amount of time, and 3 hours wasn't necessary. But one of the biggest things that I used to complain about in terms of Raw reports was the fact that excessive recaps were just not needed. Like, we didn't need to see what happened 5 minutes ago, especially when the day and age of DVR and you know, hardly any of us watch Raw live, unless, of course, we're forced to. So it's just, I think if they cut some of that out and a lot of the nonsense, then they would have been they would have had a tighter show and something. But, of course, you know, we're getting away from the fact that Evolution and the Shield were in the middle of the ring tonight. I think regardless of the reaction that the crowd had, that this is going to be something big for everybody involved, and I'm really excited.
All right, let's tie this together here with what many feel is the match of the year in the WWE this year so far. I'm referring to the six-man tag from the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view when it was the Wyatts against the Shield.
Right.
Do you think that this six-man tag here has the potential to possibly live up to, if not exceed, the six-man tag from Elimination Chamber this year?
I think that six-man tags are amazing in WWE. Rarely do you see a bad one unless Heath Slater is involved. So it's something that I do think is going to be top-notch. Yeah. will it exceed the expectations of Wyatt versus Shield? I don't fully think so, because that match seemed fresh. And I know that Evolution and the Shield is fresh in terms of never seeing it before, but what you saw in the Wyatt versus the Shield was all six men new. You know, new to the scene,
right,
new to the thing, new to the fans, and that's the stuff that get people excited, because in a sense, we are a part of a, no pun intended, evolution of new wrestlers, and we are literally a part of that. The fans are, in essence, a part of making them grow, a part of what they have become and what they will become. You know, if a wrestling fan came to watch wrestling today and saw Triple H, they were like, oh, my God, that's Triple H. I remember when he had long hair. Like, they remember certain things. In terms of the Shield and the Wyatt family, this is all something that's organic for the most part and created by the fans. So I think a lot of people latched onto that emotionally, and it just made the match, which was good, great.
And I think a lot of that also has to do with the fact that it was the first big situation that we've ever seen the Wyatts in as a six-man team. We'd seen them team up on Raw and on TV before, but this was their actual first major showcase pay-per-view match as a trio. And I think that had a lot to do with the reactions, was the fact that they were being treated as a big deal against an established threat. And the Shield, who, let's face it, had basically run roughshod over the WWE for the better part of a year, going back to Survivor Series 2012.
Yeah, and you also have to look at the build. I mean, they did the simplest things that made the most impact. Two teams hopping on an apron, that shouldn't be cool, but it was badass, you know?
No, absolutely. I completely agree with you. The fact that they made us wait until the Raw before and then the pay-per-view itself to see them have any kind of physical contact with each other.
Yeah, it was a lot of goodness, and I really do feel that I think that this is a different beast altogether, but in a good way. I mean, Evolution, it is the future versus the past. I mean, they literally brought this group back together, and you know, it didn't seem forced. I know a few people, like, you know, forced or the last thing they do, but I don't know. I think it happened rather seamlessly in terms of Triple H saying, you know what, screw these guys, I'm going to bring in together his minor manipulation of Orton and Batista, and then both of those guys saying, well, fuck it, why not, you know, and just essentially getting together to, you know, bring the boys back.
Well, if you recall, earlier in the episode where Evolution reunited, it was Batista and Orton against, I want to say, the Usos, and then the Shield attacked them after Batista and Orton had attacked the Usos by power bombing Jay onto the steps, I think it was. So, other than that, I mean, that kind of worked out to their features, where it was kind of a forced regathering, but at the same time, it was something that you could see the writing on the wall for, and especially with the way that Triple H is trying to get into their heads that these guys are a threat to all of us, and then they finally realized that the Shield are every bit the threat that Triple H was telling him that they were.
Yeah. So what do you think, you know, I mean, regardless, let's just assume that Flair comes down the ring, screws the Shield, and blah, blah, blah. Do they move on for another match between the six of them, or the Shield going elsewhere? Is Triple H going to focus back on Daniel Bryan? Because obviously, as you can see tonight, the momentum has shifted from Triple H trying to bring Bryan down to Stephanie being, you know, manipulative and lying and whatnot. So will it go back that way and the Shield go elsewhere, or are they going to continue this on with some other people?
I was talking to my buddy Warren about this, and Warren was the one that suggested it to me as well when we were discussing that Flair was coming back tonight. We'll get more into Flair a little bit later in the show. But he suggested that we would have a situation like what happened on TV tonight, where Flair would side with the Shield tonight and then end up turning on them at Extreme Rules. Do I see that happening? No. Do I think it's possible, though? Yes. And the reason I say that it's possible is because we've always known that Flair's the dirtiest player in the game. And what better way for Flair to bring himself back into the limelight than to be back with the boys that he ran with in the early 2000s when they were dominating the company?
Right.
To answer your question, do I see this going any? Do I see them going to another pay-per-view if that happens? Yes. And the question that I would have for you then is, does the Shield recruit backup to neutralize Ric Flair on the outside?
Well, yeah, that is a question. And, I mean, you know, the joke is that it could be Sting. I say joke because, I mean, I just don't see it happening. But I don't know who they would choose. And this brings up a point that I believe Greg DeMarco, he posted a one-off column, you know, in terms of what could possibly happen with Evolution versus the Shield. And he brought up the fact that there might be a concept left that can help not just the fans, but the groups as a whole, and it is a two-ring, double-caged, four-on-four war known as War Games.
I think if that happens, then I think you add Daniel Bryan to the Shield and Kane to the mix with Evolution.
Yeah. Well, is it a pipe dream of ours, or is it something that could possibly go down?
Do I think we'll ever see War Games in the WWE? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
No, I don't, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think the closest that we would ever get to War Games inside of the WWE is to do a six-man tag inside of the Elimination Chamber.
Right, which I do all the time on WWE 2K14, so I wouldn't mind seeing. And of course the arguments are that a lot of people pose, including Greg and other commenters on that very column, is the fact that it's outdated. It's outdated. They most likely will not be able to bleed. The WWE has done everything they can to create their own version of War Games so that they don't use something that wasn't created in their umbrella. So I think that all of those have a factor in them simply just not doing it.
Well, one of the people that I'm talking to while we're doing the show here, because I'm trying to get everybody's opinions, and by the way, if you have any thoughts or comments about the show, feel free to comment in either the chat section or feel free to message myself or Tony on Skype or Facebook or whatever, and send your feedback to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on Facebook as well, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com in addition. And he was raising the point of Survivor Series, but the only issue that I have with that is I don't see this stretching out that far.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's possible, but with the shotgun booking of the WWE, they'd have to really strap down. It's extremely possible. I mean, you know, there have been stories that would go on for years or at least a year, and you know, nowadays it's rare to see that. And I do not include Daniel Bryan's eventual rise to the top to be a month-long storyline. I think that they were booked into a corner and had to do something. So I really don't, you know, really, I think it's possible, but not with the current group of people that are running the show, I guess. Yes.
All right, Tony, let's take over. We'll continue more with along the lines of Evolution and the Shield a little bit later in the show, because we will be giving you our pay-per-view predictions a little bit later. But let's hit on part number two of Tony's do's and don'ts, I guess you could say.
Yeah, we'll get a name for it. But yeah, I did finish my first can, so let me open up another one. And basically, this one goes to Paige, who, now, hear me out, everyone, because if you know who I am, you know who I love. And I'm not leaving her. I'm simply admiring someone's work in the ring, whether it be male or female. And this just happens to be female. Paige, you know, she went one-on-one with Brie Bella tonight, and you watch that match, Brie had very little to do with it. She did well, considering the fact that, you know, she's Brie Bella. But Paige just, she wrestled almost like a heel, to be honest with you. A lot of aggressiveness. You know, her primal scream is pretty awesome. The continued use of the knees, you know, not really caring about Brie's face. It was a lot of the little things that she did that was just different than anything that you've seen, unless it's Oksana accidentally dropping a knee on someone's face. She's done a lot to set herself apart. She's done a pretty good job at doing that, and I mean, the hype is real with her, which is very, very, it's good to know, actually, and it's great to see. So I'm really excited for her, where she goes, and of course, I'm hoping for the inevitable rematch in which her time is, you know, just expired.
A couple of things about Paige here. One, you can tell that the business is in her blood. And they mention the fact that she's come from a wrestling family. They haven't specifically come out and mentioned her by name, but we will. Her mother is former Shimmer champion Saraya Knight, who, if you haven't had a chance to catch any Shimmer, the best words that I can use to describe Saraya Knight are batshit crazy.
Hmm.
So, obviously, wrestling comes in her blood, and you were pointing out the fact that she has kind of heel tendencies, and the way that her mother wrestles, it's not surprising that those tendencies would rub off on Paige as well. I think Brie has gotten significantly better recently. I would definitely say she's the better of the two workers when it comes to the Bella Twins, but I think a lot of that has to do with who she's married to as well and the fact that she's probably been working out in the gym with him too.
Right.
But you could definitely tell that Paige was leading the tone for their match.
Yeah, and I mean, she's been doing that the past 2 weeks. You know, ever since she won the belt, she's been the, I think someone somewhere called Alicia Fox the veteran in the ring, when I just don't see that. But in terms of, you know, being the ring general, I do believe a lot of it had to do with Paige. And it's really only going to help all the females. I mean, in the last 3 weeks, including today, the last three Raws, they've gotten more time than you've seen in a long time, unless, of course, it was like a tag team match or anything like that. But the last three one-on-one matches have had actual in-ring chemistry, no matter how little it may have been. There's a little bit of psychology. There's a flow to the match. It's not all offense on Paige's part or the other. It's not a Cena win. It's a legit, like, this girl's trying to prove something to everyone involved. And I think because of that, she's going to stand out more so than any of the other females, and they are going to want to, both in the backstage area and in the ring, they're going to want to do better. They're going to notice that they're getting more time and want to do something with that time, hopefully.
I think a lot of that has to do, and I'm sorry to kind of throw your beloved under the bus here, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of the focus got taken off of AJ Lee after what happened with Punk. And
did it get taken off of her? Yeah, go ahead.
And the fact that with his walkout, is what it is, that her association with Punk is causing her to be de-pushed as well. Agree or disagree?
Well, I think to an extent, yeah. I mean, I think AJ stopped being pushed, if you will, long before Punk walked out. I mean, if I'm being a realist, yes, I will highlight her in all of the columns, and I will, you know, I'm not going to lie. Everybody knows it's a gimmick. But in terms of the show, AJ stopped being pushed a long time ago as far as whether they care or don't care. They did the Tamina as Nash thing, and then they stopped doing it, and then they started doing it again. And then everything with Punk happened, and then there was no really, I mean, when's the last time AJ Lee was a really big deal? She hasn't been. She's just, her star has withered away. It has, you know, has been outshone by other divas. I'm sure there was one point where they almost did give it to Naomi. So I do agree that a lot of the recent, you know, deep pushing and whatnot had to do with Punk, but at the same time, this was possibly one of the best things to happen to the Divas division, if you care about it at all, because of the fact that, you know, the ladies are getting a bigger spotlight now than they were before. And I'm hoping that that'll bring about a whole new change of their motivation to just be better wrestlers. And if you ever speak badly again of AJ, I will hurt you.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that we're seeing kind of the new evolution of the women wrestling as well. You'll notice that a lot of them have actually gotten better, too. Summer Rae is a prime example as well of somebody that originally just came in as an assistant, basically, to Fandango, and who's starting to break out into her own as an actual in-ring competitor as well. And I look forward to seeing her when she gets done with her movie, to her coming back to Raw, because I think that she could be an excellent face for the Divas division that maybe you could turn Paige heel officially with and then do something with Paige and Summer Rae, kind of like what they did with Paige and Emma down in NXT.
There's a lot of potential. And you know what? What I've noticed is that whether you're talking to just you and I right now, or you're talking to other wrestling fans on the web, on 411 Mania, or even in the Facebook page, Yes, 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 which we should highlight at least once or twice. a lot of people are focusing on newer divas. And I think that divas like Natalya and even Naomi, you know, she's not newer, but she's new. One thing that I read even a year ago or so was the reality that these girls know what they're doing. They're just not given the time to do it. Now, do you think that that holds true, or are we just going to forget Oksana and Natalya and the Alicia Fox and, you know, people like that, and focus more on these newer girls from NXT who have a little bit more talent, arguably?
The thing about that is I think that it's not so much the time that you get, it's what you do with it. And people like Paige, people like Emma, people like Summer Rae have been able to captivate the attention of the audiences that they've had in the TV time that they've gotten, and thus they've been able to get more TV time. You can literally hear the crowd not give
right.
a crap when Alicia Fox comes down to the ring.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. And you know what's funny? Whenever there's an argument about wrestling, a lot of people like to look very, very deep when the reality is on the surface. I mean, it's exactly what you said. What are they doing with the time that's given, you know? And then you have to remember that this is all a machine, in essence. It's a company, you know? Like, you either shine on your own or you know someone and you kiss their ass. And I think that the Divas don't really have that opportunity to kiss anyone's ass, per se. And I'm not going by total Divas standards. I don't care how nice they are to Sandy the Seamstress. It's just not going to do anything. So they have to either enhance their work or their look.
There's a Rosa Mendez joke there somewhere that I'm just not going to make.
Oh, man. She is a joke. Moving on.
Yeah, let's go ahead and bring it around now. I think it's time for my focus on the show here, Tony.
Yes.
We're calling it Harry Pitt, and this is my big talking point for the evening. As you were saying with Tony's dues, this is my chance to put the spotlight on somebody that I feel needs the spotlight, or a segment, or a particular happening inside of a match itself. And I think for the debut episode here, I'm going to talk about something that kind of rubbed me the wrong way in the Daniel Bryan and Kane segment. I understand Bryan's coming into the segment with the hurt neck from last week with the multiple tombstone pile drivers, and I get that because that move's always been basically treated as death in the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that I have is that Bryan took several opportunities to try to get Bree away from Kane himself, and then at the tail end, while Bryan's on the floor being checked on by the medical staff, and Kane's trying to pull Bree back underneath the ring again, Bree basically kicks him like 3 times in the chest and then escapes on her own.
Right.
I don't think that helps Daniel Bryan's character at all that Bree was so easily able to escape there. Because even though he's not full strength, I get that. At the same time, though, as a guy it's your wife, as you mentioned earlier in the show there, Daniel, wouldn't that be something that you would want to fight through regardless of the pain that you're physically experiencing?
Right. Yeah, I think that there is a lot of... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, much less having her actually escape from Kane herself.
Yeah, there was a lot, in my opinion, there was a lot of little things wrong with that segment. The grand idea was, you know, I don't want to say cool, because it wasn't cool. We've seen it before, whatever. But and it started when they came out. Daniel Bryan is pissed the fuck off. He is angry. And Bree's over there shouting yes and smiling, like, look at your dude next to you. He's got a neck brace on. You should probably be a little bit upset too, ma'am. Just a little. And then Bryan cuts his super serious promo,
which he stumbles a little bit, but, you know, it happens. No one's perfect. I mean, I've stumbled, what, 20 times in the last 40 minutes, so we're good. But in terms of Bree's reaction to it all, you know, it just came off as like, well, first of all, what, all of a sudden, now that you guys are married, you're coming out and you're the new power couple. I bet she's happy as hell, but it comes off a little hokey. Thankfully, Brian tried to explain it, like he told her not to come out and blah, 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 which you got to at least clap for the continuity there, or at least the attempt of it. But, and then you got Bree in the ring with Kane, and yes, it was a little easy for her to fight off, you know, the big red machine, and a little bit harder to see Brian try to do so. I believe Brian, Kane, like, barely pushed him, and Brian flew out of the ring. But, you know, and then Bree's able to break out of it. And then, of course, Bree does the, you know, one of the dumbest things is get back in the ring after leaving the ring to be stalked by Kane. So, yeah, a lot of little things went on with it, and I agree to an extent in terms of, you know, the strength of Brian or lack thereof. I don't think a lot of people looked at it that way as much as they saw, oh, Kane's coming from the bottom of the ring, you know, because that's cool. But, again, it wasn't – I guess there's levels of how bad things are, and if I were to give a level of how bad that was, it wouldn't be nowhere near as bad as John Cena talking about a donkey.
No argument here. It's just that something that bothered me is the fact that she was able to so easily escape after Brian hit Kane with a wrench and wasn't able to keep Kane down on the canvas. That's the issue that I have.
Yeah. Okay. I could see that.
We're getting ready to go into our Extreme Rules preview here. Do you want to take one more quick break before we go into this, Tony?
Yeah, we could do that. Basically, what we'll do is we'll come back, we'll talk a little bit about Ric Flair, and then we will close it up with the pay-per-view preview. All right? So we'll talk to everyone in about, give it about 2 minutes. Until then, throw your fingers in the air.
And we're back. Once again, Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse debut of the Raw Reaction. Tony, you still with me?
I'm here.
All right, just making sure. all right. So we opened a can, so to speak, for Wade Barrett. We opened the can and heard the fizz for Paige. Why don't you go ahead and pour that drink one out there, Tony?
All right.
So good.
All right, now this one is for, it's just for, not even for the man himself as much as it is for the return of the drunk rambling Ric Flair. You know, I'm just going to assume that he's perpetually drunk, never sober. So it makes me feel better when he talks because sometimes he's, you know, Piper from the late 80s, 90s. Sometimes he's Piper from last year. It really depends. In terms of tonight, however, it was this was more of a – it was planting a seed, of course, of something that we all see coming because, like you said, Ric Flair is just the dirtiest player in the game. So it makes sense. I think we could all see it coming. I think we could all see him screwing the Shield at one point or another, probably this Sunday. But I think that that's one of the things in wrestling that's irrelevant, whether we could see it coming or not. It's how is it done? How is it executed? And Ric Flair comes strutting down. He mentions a few things that, you know, we don't really know what he's talking about. You know, just leave it to old Papa Flair to say something. But he gets the point across. He shakes the hands of the Shield, and he walks away. And I think that really, that alone was like a very, it was a cool spot, and it also leads, adds intrigue to the future, and it just puts every, it puts a little stamp of approval as well as a little bit of nostalgia, not just for Ric Flair, but for Evolution itself, and I just thought it worked well.
My big thing about this is, and I have 3 points to touch on as far as this goes. The first one being that as much as we had seen Ric Flair in those Evolution hype videos, the ones where they went over the history of Evolution that they had been airing on WWE TV, I think you kind of had to bring him back to TV. He was kind of the elephant in the room as far as that whole situation was involved.
Yeah, I can agree with
Number two, I believe that it made perfect sense that his return was in St. Louis because one of his greatest rivals was from St. Louis. I am referring, of course, to Harley Race. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't his first title win from Harley happen in St. Louis? I'm going to have to check my facts on that one. But
Yeah, you can't ask questions like that. I don't remember what I had for lunch yesterday. So
I'm going to look into that here. I have my I have my PWI almanac around here somewhere. I'll find it and get back to you on that one. Maybe while you're starting to do some of the previews for the pay-per-view.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harry has a PWI almanac. That alone makes him badass. So,
and part number three here is I definitely think that Flair associating himself, even if it is on a temporary basis, with guys like the Shield, definitely gives the rub to a guy like a Dean Ambrose, like a Seth Rollins, like a Roman Reigns, to have a stamp of approval from a guy that's been everywhere and done everything in this business.
Right. Well, I mean, in a sense, it's not, you know, in storyline purposes, it's not too shocking considering he aligned himself with Evolution at one point anyways, which, according to Evolution when they started, was a group of young, you know, studs, Orton and Batista, coming up from, you know, the ranks and becoming something awesome, similar to the Shield, how they have come up and have become something great as well. It's true, they're not suit-wearing, you know, limousine-riding, jet, you know, plane-flying people, but I think that, you know, it's something that, well, of course, like I said, we all know it's going to lead to something, but it was still something that makes sense, and all of the facts that you brought up, it just amplifies that sentiment.
Absolutely. I think having Flair's credibility, especially in regards to this situation, definitely makes the show look stronger. And, again, like I said, it was the elephant in the room of seeing Flair in the videos and then him not being around now. You kind of had to bring him back. And, as you said earlier, it's Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Perpetually
drunk
or not.
Right. Do you think
you
that
mentioned
his behavior...
that sometimes he's... go ahead.
His behavior... backstage. I mean, of course, everything, and you'll hear this from me a lot, everything that we read on the internet is either speculation or an assumption of something that has happened due to previous events. Unless, of course, there's some factual evidence, everything that we mention, or at least me personally, is something that is hypothetical or at the very least assumed to be true. So if Ric Flair is a person who is continuously in a drunken stupor or does just get himself in trouble, do you think that that's going to cause any issues in the future? Or will there even be a future?
I do, actually, and going back to the point that you raised earlier, that sometimes he's Piper from the mid-80s and sometimes he's Piper from last year, yeah, on occasion he's also Jake Roberts from Legends of Wrestling. So it's a case of which Ric Flair are you going to get?
Right.
And knowing which Ric Flair you're going to get is not something that most people can prepare for because you just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got Triple H by his side. He's got Orton. He's got, and I mean that they are smart enough to grab the microphone or move the story along or simply laugh it off or whatever it may be. So I'm not really worried in terms of, you know, and how long is this going to last? I think they got one more in them. I think we'll see their evolution in the Shield interact just a little bit longer than Extreme Rules. I think there's a possibility there. So I think we'll be seeing much more of Flair. And I think he'll be all right, hopefully.
I don't think we're going to see Flair a whole lot in regards to this, but at the same time, again, a guy like Flair lending his credibility is going to do nothing but help the product along, I think.
Right. All right.
You ready to get to Sunday?
Yeah, sure.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Harry and Tony present our Extreme Rules pay-per-view preview. Let's start at the bottom of the card here, and we'll work our way up to the main event matches here. We talked about this during Raw while you were doing the report for 411, and I was just kind of casually watching inside of my apartment. Do you think they add a three-way between Cesaro, Van Damme, and Swagger to the card? And if so, who wins and why?
Right. If they do add a three-way, I think it's Cesaro's to win. He's getting the push, and I don't think that it hurts Swagger or RVD, considering it's a three-way and one could blame the other and vice versa. And Cesaro's the man to push. Now, that's assuming that they add the match to the card. I mean, I do know that the pre-show has two midgets going at it. But you never know. And considering it's kind of slim, what is it, like six matches, I think?
Six right now officially announced.
Right. Okay, so yeah, let's just assume that it does happen. And I think that's a good call by you because you're the one that mentioned it. I didn't see it. I just saw it as a build-up to an eventual, like, oh, they're in the IC picture, you know. But no, I think that that's a possibility of them three going at it. And if they do, I'm definitely calling Cesaro for the winner.
I'm going to agree with you. I think Cesaro pins Swagger, and the reason being is that Cesaro has already beaten Swagger twice on WWE TV recently, and that the match with Van Damme would be a fresh one for Cesaro, as well as being able to continue to rehash the history between Paul Heyman and Rob Van Damme as well. So I think that's something that you could get more use out of.
Right. They seem to be playing with that a lot.
You mentioned the pre-show match, so we might as well touch on it here. It's pretty rare that they put the piss break match on the pre-show.
Yeah, I have absolutely no interest in anything that's going on with the Matadors, El Torito, 3MB, or Hornswoggle. There is a place for humor in wrestling, and I know that people will enjoy it. I don't dislike it. I'm just completely disinterested. I don't know. It's just not something. I don't care. Hornswoggle wins or loses. The Bull wins because
yeah,
he's a face.
Yeah, Torito wins to hopefully put a wrap on this once and for all.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the actual announced card now. Alexander Rusev with Lana against R-Truth and Xavier Woods. I don't think there's any question that Rusev's going over here.
Yeah, I think we win in the first about 20 seconds when that hot blonde comes out, and then everything else is irrelevant.
I will say this much. Apparently, she's actually from Florida.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures of her, yeah.
So, I mean, she's really good with the gimmick. I'll give her that much.
Yeah, she seems dedicated, and her name backwards is Anal, so that's cool.
Jesus. All right, Big E Langston, or excuse me, Big E, sorry, it's a course of habit, defends the Intercontinental title against Bad News Barrett.
That's a tough one to call. I mean, you don't usually have a competition, a tournament, you know, leading up to a loss, you know. And Wade Barrett, I believe that they may be behind him. However, I really like Big E. I think that he's kind of fallen off to no fault of his own. I'm going to go with Barrett taking it, mainly because Big E, he's a young guy. He's got plenty of time to grow and to become something, and he's huge, and he's black. So I think both of those have a lot to do with his future push, and that is not a that's not a comment that, that pertains to any type of racial discrimination. Simply the fact that he's
just
huge and he's black is going
please,
to make him stand out.
Please don't turn into Donald Sterling.
No, I'd never do that.
I'm going to agree with you, and I think that Barrett wins. And the reason being is that I think that the only logical feud left for Big E if doesn't win would be Alberto Del Rio. And given the match that was announced for SmackDown, I wouldn't be surprised to see Del Rio walk out of SmackDown with the U.S. title.
Yeah, that would suck. But then again, you know, Dean's not doing anything with the belt. Okay, so
exactly. It's not exactly like that belt's been relevant in most of the time that Ambrose has held it.
All right.
So I'm going to pick Barrett to win, but then the question I ask you is, where does Wade Barrett, or Bad News Barrett, sorry, go from there?
Well, like we mentioned, I believe that Cesaro, Swagger, and RVD are all credible opponents for the Intercontinental title, so I think he may lock horns with one of them. And I think everyone in the tournament kind of rose up, even though with whether it was a win or a loss, they became somewhat relevant in that mid-card section. So he's got options. Just depends on who they put him up against.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Barrett beat Ziggler in the first round?
Yes.
So I would love to see them go down that road again, because I think that given the actual time, like they got a decent amount of time on that episode of Raw that they faced each other, but you give those two 15 minutes on a pay-per-view and I think they could work some magic.
I agree. They need to get Ziggler away from pandering to a man that socked him in the face. But yeah, they I could see that happening.
Don't get me started on the wussification of Dolph Ziggler. Women's Divas title is on the line, so used to calling it the women's title, as Paige defends against Tamina. I think we're in store for a screwy finish here. I think Paige wins, but I think she wins by disqualification when Tamina snaps.
Yeah, well, no AJ, doesn't matter. No, actually, I see Paige winning. I don't know, maybe Tamina will snap, but I don't think they care about her enough to give her that much. This is just a means to an end. You know, they can't have AJ, so they might as well go with the closest thing to her. I think that Paige will move on shortly after this. I'm not sure. Maybe he'll go the route that you were talking about in terms of another newcomer. I wouldn't mind that.
The thought that I had was the next challenger for Paige might be Summer Rae.
Okay.
So I still think that we get another month out of Tamina here, because I think Tamina has the chops there. And as mentioned, Tamina was in line for the push when AJ had the title as well, and then that kind of got dropped without any kind of notice once AJ dropped the title to Paige and then sort of disappeared.
All right. I am interested to see how the match goes. I think that Tamina is huge, and we haven't seen Paige. Well, I haven't seen Paige go up against the likes of someone. You know, I want to see how she handles it.
And I do think that, and I think that this will probably be the best Divas title match we've seen on pay-per-view in quite some time. I mean, granted, given the clusterfuck that was the WrestleMania Divas titles match, that's not saying a ton. But if these two get some time, I think they know what to do with it, and they'll put in a solid effort.
Yeah, well, as I look back on the records of Divas title matches that I've seen in the past, you know, 200-plus days, I think I've given them all 4.5 to 5 stars. So I don't know, man. She's got a hell of a ladder to climb.
All right, now let's take AJ out of those matches and put somebody else in them. Do they lose 4 or 5 stars?
They're usually half or one.
Yeah, exactly. We go to the steel cage, John Cena and Bray Wyatt. You're up.
I really like Wyatt to win, but I don't see the way the writing has been. I don't see what they would do with that. Cena's not going to turn heel. He's not going to go away. So they would just be prolonging this battle, and I don't know what for. Yeah, steel cage is supposed to be something that ends a feud. So I think that Bray would do well with a win. I don't think that a loss is going to hurt him too badly. But I mean, you're fighting Cena, so I don't know. It's hard to predict. I want Wyatt. I'll assume Cena.
I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I think Bray Wyatt wins.
Nice.
He doesn't win anything resembling clean. Both members of the Wyatt family still somehow manage to get involved, despite the fact that the steel cage is supposed to prevent that. But I think after 2 months now, basically two, almost 3 months, of Bray Wyatt's mind games with John Cena here, it's kind of put up or shut up time for Wyatt. It's kind of a chance for them to finally give Wyatt the win that he needs in order to establish some credibility with the fact that his character believes what he says, believes that he can be a visionary for the members of the universe that seem to follow him.
Right.
So I think you almost have to give...
I would love for him to win.
I think you almost have to give Wyatt the win here.
All right, well, I'm going to let him know you said that.
All right. We talked about it earlier. Let's make our official predictions. The six-man tag match.
This is another one of those where I want the Shield to win. I think Evolution will. I think Ric Flair will have something to do with it. So I'll just stick with that.
Flair turns on Sunday. I think that he turns down the road a little bit later. I believe that the Shield wins. I believe that Roman Reigns pins Triple H. But I believe that there's a post-match attack as well, because I don't think we're only going to get one pay-per-view for this. I think that they're going to extend this further on into the year. And I could honestly see them extending this all the way to, you've heard the rumor as well as I have probably, that they want to do Roman Reigns and Triple H at SummerSlam this year.
Right.
So I could see this leading all the way up to that specifically mentioned match for SummerSlam, by them eventually taking away the partners and having the two leaders of the two groups here. Because at this point, Roman Reigns is the leader of the Shield.
Okay.
And obviously,
Triple
H is the man in charge of Evolution. So I don't think that they're one and done for this year. So I do think the Shield wins, but I don't know that they get out of the show unscathed. I think there's a post-match beatdown as well.
All right. Well, I would like to see it.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. I wouldn't mind. Like I said earlier, I want to see this go a little further than just this one-off pay-per-view match. So I had forgotten about the possibility of Triple H versus Reigns. And if Triple H is willing to, put him over, which I think he is, then it'd be interesting and cool to see.
Let's talk about the title match, the announced main event, even though I don't think it will be the main event. I think that the Evolution and Shield six-man will main event the show itself. Daniel Bryan defends his WWE World Heavyweight title against Kane, and you have to imagine that this will probably be turned into a no disqualification match at the show.
Yeah, Cole did mention something about it being, no rules with, no all bets are off or something. He didn't say no disqualification, but that's what he insinuated, and that's probably what's going to happen. I think a lot of people are assuming that I've read, actually, that they're thinking Bryan is a transitional champion. Last time Kane was in a match like this, it seemed oddly familiar, was against Benoit, blah, blah, blah. I don't think any of that's true. I think Bryan is going to keep the belt, and he's going to go on and, be a legit champion. So I see Bryan winning, definitely.
I think Bryan wins, and I think he wins decisively. I almost want to say that he makes Kane tap out in the yes lock.
Ooh.
Monster or no monster.
Yeah. It's an interesting call.
Because
I see a win. I don't see that. That's nice.
And the reason being is I think that'll give Daniel Bryan an establishing moment as champion of him yet again overcoming the odds. And I believe that Bryan, given the way that he has been booked the last couple of weeks here, needs a strong one in order to keep his title reign from becoming kind of lame duckish.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that real life has got
I understand that real life has gotten in the way of his last couple weeks on Raw between being on his honeymoon and then his father passing away. By the way, condolences to the Danielson family. But I think a lot of that also has to do with the fact that you're going to want to keep your champion strong, especially when it's your heavyweight champion. Otherwise, you're going to end up with the same kind of thing that plagued Randy Orton's title reign, and I don't know that they necessarily want that stigma on a champion yet again.
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point. And, again, I seem to – you know, I think that our – it's funny. I don't think we disagreed as far as predictions go in terms of who's winning, but I do like the aspect of us having completely different mindsets on how they get there, which I'm sure a lot of fans – because this is one of those cards where you just kind of already know. So the excitement isn't in the win.
We did disagree on the Evolution and Shield match. You picked Evolution. I picked the Shield.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think you picked Cena and I picked Bray Wyatt.
Yeah, we did disagree. I don't like you anymore.
That's all right. You'll get used to me.
Okay. Hope you get used to me. Okay, so yeah, those are the predictions for the Extreme Rules card. This does bring us closer to the end of our time, the first show, and I don't know, I had a good time.
I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to doing this further, and I'm also looking forward to getting you guys involved here. Hopefully, starting with the next episode, we'll be able to take some phone calls and bring you guys in for your thoughts on Raw, and especially since next week is the Raw after Extreme Rules, and you got to figure that the pay-per-view Raws are usually, we'll see what
right.
happens going forward. We discussed this a little bit briefly during the Fandango interlude. And we're going to close out the show here by telling you a little bit about both of us here. So, Tony, why don't you go ahead and give them your credentials, and then I'll go ahead and give mine, and then I'll wrap it up.
Okay. Yeah, I'm an egotist. I love me. I think I'm amazing. I assume that you all do, too. No, in reality, I write for 411mania.com. I've been there for quite a few years now. I write the Wrestling 5-1, took it over from Greg DeMarco. I am a Greg DeMarco guy. I am working on a shirt. I also do bounce around a few of the, hey, we have a phone call. I'm willing to cut myself off a little bit just to answer this, all right?
Go ahead.
Hello. Okay. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, good evening, everybody. Is Greg there?
Greg is not here.
Who am I talking with right now?
Tony Acero.
Oh, Tony.
And I'm
Jeffrey
Harry,
with
411.
Harris.
How are you doing tonight, Tony?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Are you in like total like AJ withdrawal right now?
I'm,
are you like
dude,
dying?
Have you seen the Raw report? I have to put in images just to make myself feel better.
I don't know how are you able to function right now. I just don't understand.
The WWE Network and the search bar.
Yeah,
do you like
has
hate,
a large stock of
do you like hate CM Punk more than ever now for that he's inflicting this sort of emotional and physical pain on you?
Well, him and I had a talk about the ability to share AJ, and I'm giving him his space and his time. It's only a matter of time before she realizes that she doesn't like a man with bags under his eyes and comes back to me. So I'm not really worried.
Okay. What do you guys make of this business with John Cena and Bray Wyatt? Like, I kind of agree with what you were saying in the Raw report, Tony. Like, I just don't know where they're going with this. Like, why is John Cena attacking the WWE universe now? What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. It's short-sighted storytelling. They're only using it to get to Sunday. Because, like I said earlier in the show, and like Harry brought up, is that there's no way in hell they're going to turn Cena. This isn't a turn. And as you saw on the show, 2 hours later, he's referring to donkeys. So, yeah, I think it's just a tool that they're using to get to Sunday, and then it'll all of a sudden disappear. Unless, of course, they prolong it. I thought that Cena was going to take the win. I do love Harry's idea, and I would rather they go that route. But I don't know. I don't know where they're going with Cena. I don't think they're going anywhere with Cena. I think they're using him to build Wyatt up.
But why have him, like, criticize the WWE universe? Because that's not something they've really had him do before. even though it's always he's always been like this polarizing figure among fans. You know, like women and young kids love him, but the you know the older fans hate him and all that. But he's never really acknowledged that. Now he's like all upset that like people are rooting for Bray Wyatt and everything.
And it's just
weird.
What do you think,
Aaron? That's kind of the point that I touched on when I said that Cena's comments earlier on Raw questioning the members of the universe about their decision to vote him into that thing. It almost kind of came off disingenuous. Like, we've never heard Cena go that route of actually trying to blame the fans there, and I don't think that that's something that Cena would do. I think, as you said, it was kind of just a crutch for them to get through that segment going forward into the actual bringing out of the children by what Bray Wyatt there. It wasn't necessarily something that Cena would be known for. It's just that that's, to me, why it came off so disingenuous. Just not the Cena that we're used to, not the Cena that we've seen, and definitely not something that they're probably going to follow up on going forward.
Is this just sort of a byproduct of Bray Wyatt just being so awesome and good at what he does?
I think that has a lot to do with it.
Because yep. I got to be honest, well, I didn't think the match at WrestleMania was that great. I don't know about you guys, but I was completely enthralled by Bray Wyatt and just everything he was doing.
I had a conversation with one of my buddies about that show, and one of the things that we talked about was our favorite moment from WrestleMania. And I told him that my favorite moment from WrestleMania was Bray Wyatt popping up into the spider walk in order to counter the five-knuckle shuffle. You could see that moment of Cena's face draining its color when Wyatt did that.
Right. Yeah. I thought the match was great. I remember the first hour or so leading into that match was, you know, I think it was in the middle of the card basically, and it was awesome.
Yes, right around the 8:30 mark.
Yeah, the crowd was singing along with Wyatt, and they, you know, they're basically, you know, like, what was it? It was the ref was telling Cena, that's not who you are. Like, it was drama. It was over-the-top drama, but it was good shit. It was a great pacing, and, yeah, so I was completely sold. And I don't think Wyatt had to win that one. A little bit different this time
around,
though.
I'm just saying, the things like Wyatt does, to me, he's kind of like the new iteration of, like, The Undertaker and Mankind. I really, and maybe I'm getting too ahead of myself, but I really feel he's that good. I'm like, what he's doing, I can't believe the things he's doing and how just how charismatic he is, you know?
I could see your point there about him being the new Mankind there, and especially in regards to the charisma there. I think that this right here, for longtime fans, I think that Bray Wyatt is kind of what they wanted the Wayland Mercy gimmick to be. Just more modernized into today's society with the integration with the things like the followings with the social media, with them working in the...
You can also see kind of like Kevin Thorne as kind of like the prototype for something like this.
No, I'm just kidding.
Kevin Thorne is like the Pale Rider. What was his name? Mordecai?
Mordecai, yeah.
About 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, this
actually,
is definitely...
He was kind of like this religious cult leader, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It didn't, you know what
it kind of reminds me of?
What?
You mentioned Kevin Thorne. It reminds me of a different Kevin. Does anybody remember Kevin Sullivan from Down in the Florida days?
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster?
That would be the Kevin Sullivan in question there. Just the mind control that he had over people as well, it kind of reminds me a lot of that.
It doesn't, honestly, I don't know. The Dungeon of Doom was just so campy and corny.
Right,
and
but
cheesy.
Bray Wyatt,
he's over the top, but, like, somehow he falls, like, just short of being, like a caricature that he makes it just really work. Plus, he's really improved in the ring, and he's just, to me, got such a tremendous handle on this gimmick and this character. Like, I'm just enthralled by everything he does. The music, the atmosphere he creates, and you know, it's no wonder that, you know, he's got little kids singing along with him now.
Absolutely.
Wyatt
I agree with the point
that
you're making. It makes perfect sense.
Wyatt is a he's a character that is rare only in the fact that he has full control over what he's doing. He's one of the few people who, when I'm doing the Raw report, will try my best to type out literally everything that he's saying. If Cena speaks, I summarize. If you know, if someone else is making a promo, I will point out keywords. Wyatt, I will literally try to type out everything he's saying because the boy is fire. I don't care if it's an extended metaphor, if it's a little story that he's telling. Everything makes sense. Everything works, and it's so out of the realm of everything else that you're seeing on the same show that it stands out. And I think that's definitely one of his biggest attributes is the promo work and the fact that he's got his hands all over it.
Since you're a fan of the Divas and everything, I mean, do you think this was the right move with Paige to bring her in and put her over AJ right off the bat and just kind of try and
I did think about it. I think the whole leg sweep thing was really the only thing that bothered me. I was fully on board with her winning the title the way she did. Not everybody needs a full build. Not everybody needs the Ryback push, those constant squash matches before you finally get the title shot. I think it worked out. I think it's an underdog story, and I think that people latched onto it almost immediately.
Okay, the last thing I'll say, and then I'll get out of you guys' hair, is I really don't know what they're trying to do with this whole Jack Swagger Cesaro business. And I mean, just because I mean I like Tame and I like Cesaro so much, but I don't really think they really know what to do with Cesaro right now. And I mean,
I think Cesaro is fine with
or Biggie Langston for that. To me, this tournament should have been like a great spotlight for Cesaro. And then have him feud with Big E, but I feel like they've kind of fumbled the ball on this one.
Well, I think that Cesaro getting aligned with Heyman is enough for him for now. Because Heyman's going to give him an immediate rub, especially after what Lesnar did at WrestleMania. That automatically adds even more credibility to the name of Paul Heyman as a manager. And as John Bradshaw Layfield has pointed out before himself, Paul Heyman did manage three consecutive World Heavyweight Champions back in 2002 into 2003.
He also managed John Heidenreich.
Well, yeah, they can't all be winners.
I think the tournament could have done one of two things. It could have built up Cesaro even more than including the Rumble at the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. It could have added to what he was already doing, or it could have built up more than one person. And I think that the second route was more beneficial and is what they're doing now. They gave Wade Barrett a chance that he otherwise would not have gotten. They gave RVD some credibility, at least a little bit more than what he was before. Dolph Ziggler had somewhat of a chance to shine. So I think that it helped out more people than just giving Cesaro the win, because honestly, I think that's what we all predicted. I'm going to agree with Harry and say that he doesn't necessarily need it right now, especially with Heyman, with the Battle Royal win, and the fact that he's Cesaro and he's pretty badass. I do agree with you, though, as far as them not really knowing what they're going to do with him. But at the same time, that's okay, because if he starts getting shoved down our throats, we're going to get pissed off and rebel. And I say we as a collective unit of the IWC, but at the same time, fans in general, like, the best thing for these people to do is to let Cesaro grow organically. And I think that hopefully is what they're doing now.
And I got to criticize JR here. JR with a stupid blog post saying, like, fans are abandoning ship on Daniel Bryan. That was really stupid. I have no idea why he said that. That was really – I mean, I'm hesitant to say idiotic, but I don't really get where he was coming from there. But
yeah,
Harry,
I caught JR.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great night.
Yep. Talk to you later.
You too. You do the same. Real quick, in regards to JR's blog post, yeah, I read a lot of JR's blog stuff there, and that was one of the things that kind of threw me there, because I don't think we've even seen the height of the Daniel Bryan revolution yet. I think that they're still even higher and higher up that this is going to go before it even starts to fade out. So the fact that JR is talking about people jumping. Go ahead.
I wonder what sites you read. There's always going to be people that have dissuasions towards, you know, the popular vote and everything. And that's always going to happen. It's always going to be there. It's something that you've accepted. And I think what JR has done is something that I wrote about last year. I call it the
the preemptive prose, where people try to defend an idea that has yet to even come up. Everyone, JR saying, oh, get off of Brian's back, he's, you know, this is what you wanted, blah, blah, blah. I don't think the fans have rebelled against it yet, especially considering since he's won the belt, he hasn't really been a factor on the show through, you know, unforeseen circumstances and unfortunate circumstances. So I think he's just, I think he's doing a little bit of preemptive, you know, defense on something that simply hasn't happened yet.
Well, I completely agree with you. And real quick, I wanted to touch on one other thing that that the caller touched on there, and that was the thing with Swagger. I do believe we're starting to see the beginning of the end for Zeb Coulter on WWE TV.
Oh.
I don't like it as much as anyone else would, but at the same time, there, given the fact that he's getting into the angle with Heyman here, he's getting in a little bit more screen time in regards to Swagger being involved with Van Damme here. But at the same time, you'll notice that it's almost constantly Coulter's distraction that's causing Swagger to lose.
Yeah.
It happened again tonight when... Oh, go ahead.
It would be unfortunate to see him lose, to leave, but at the same time, you know, everything comes to some sort of end, even the streak, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Like I was saying, yeah, of course, and that lost my train of thought there for a second. With Coulter costing, the distraction with Coulter and Heyman costing Swagger yet again tonight another match against Cesaro, which, by the way, that high-bridge German looked really nice.
Yeah, it was great.
I could see that this beginning to be the end of the writing on the wall for Zeb Coulter on WWE TV.
Well, we had a good time.
All right,
we got about 5 minutes left in the show, guys. I wanted to give Harry the microphone to just kind of tell you about him as well as where he comes from and close up the show.
All right, thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. Thanks for for rocking as the co-host here for the Raw Reaction. My name is Harry Broadhurst. I am the play-by-play voice of Black Diamond Wrestling and Real Action Pro Wrestling here in Ohio. I got my start in the business about 3 years ago, and I've been a play-by-play commentator more or less ever since, just working for various promotions, getting my foot in the door wherever I can. Long-time wrestling fan. I've been watching for about 20 years. I'm 29 years old now. A lot of what I do, a lot of the following that I do, I read 411 on a regular basis. That's how I became familiar with Greg and Tony's work. I am the creator of the Yes, Yes, Yes page on Facebook. Search it into your search bar, Yes, Yes, Yes. I'm sure me, Tony, or Greg will add you as soon as you find us there. In addition, you can find Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on Facebook.com as well, in addition to www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. Let's also not forget the other shows here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Tomorrow's the Greg DeMarco Show. The debut of the Thursday Night Destruction is this week as well. And then we will have a pay-per-view wrap-up this Sunday after Extreme Rules. So don't forget to tune into that as well. I think that's about it for now. You got anything else, Tony?
Nope. Just, join us next week. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. And like Harry said, any changes you want to see, just send them to me or him. And he will probably, you know, listen to you. I may just ignore you completely, but it all depends.
That's kind of what you do. That's cool.
Yeah, it is. All right. See you guys next week.